Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, we're protecting our team today and keeping them home. Today's MoneyWise Live is pre-recorded, so phone lines aren't open. It's time to talk money, but there's always room for a little bit of humor. So, did you hear the one about the guy whose credit score was so bad that he got a credit card offer in the mail that was pre-declined? Well, I told you it was a little humor, but your finances shouldn't be a laughing matter. Our host, Kingdom Advisors President Rob West, helps us get serious today about a very important number that affects your money. Now, today's program is pre-recorded, so don't call in when you hear us talking to callers later in the program, okay? I'm Steve Moore, sheltering in place as we learn how to check your credit score for free. That's next on MoneyWise Live. Well, Rob, all kidding aside, your credit score really is a number that you want to take seriously, isn't it?
Well, that's true, Steve. It has a direct effect on what you'll have to pay in interest on a mortgage, credit cards, and other loans, and possibly whether you get credit at all. Banks and other lenders use your three-digit credit score to make those determinations, but also your credit score can affect how much you pay for auto insurance, whether you'll be able to rent an apartment, and even whether you get hired when applying for a job. So your credit score is super important, and if you haven't checked it lately, it's worth taking 5 minutes to do it. It'll give you a fairly good idea of your financial health.
Okay, but we don't want to crack open our wallets to do that. So how do we get a credit score for free?
Well, the first place to start would be with your bank or your credit card issuer. Most of them offer free credit score checks to their clients. Log into your bank or credit card account online, and in many cases, you can get your credit score with just a few clicks, perhaps right on the homepage.
All right, but let's say I have a bank or some El Cheapo credit card that doesn't offer that service. What can I do then?
Well, credit card companies are always hoping to entice new customers, so several of them offer free credit score services, even if you're not a customer. These include CreditWise from Capital One, Chase Credit Journey, and Discover Credit Scorecard. Those services will draw your credit score from one of the three credit reporting bureaus, either TransUnion, Experian, or Equifax. Just remember that you don't have to apply for one of their cards to get your score.
This is quite amazing because I remember, and you might remember as well, when everyone had to pay to get your credit score, but that didn't last too long, did it?
That's right.
All right, we said your credit score is a three-digit number, but how do we know if it's a good number?
Yeah. Well, you can actually have several different credit scores depending on which company is used. FICO is probably still the most common, Steve, although other companies are entering that space. FICO happens to stand for the Fair Isaac Corporation. Now, your FICO score can range from 300 to 850, but anything below 600 means you'll have difficulty getting credit. 600 to about 670 might be called fair. 670 to about 740 would be considered good. 740 to 800, very good. And anything above 800, well, you are a rare individual indeed. And that's where the law of diminishing returns comes into play, Steve. There's really no advantage in trying to go above that or striving for a perfect 850. By the way, I've never seen one. It won't earn you extra brownie points with the lenders. By the way, checking your credit score won't lower it at all. I know that's a concern for many folks. It's called a soft pull, and it's different from a hard pull, which is when you apply for credit and the lender checks your score for the purpose of determining whether they'll extend credit to you.
All right. Okay. Well, let's say my score is hovering just below one of those numbers and I want to bump it up into a better range. What can I do at that point?
Well, the absolute best thing you can do to improve your credit score is to simply pay your bills on time and in full every month. That makes up what's called your payment history, which is about 35% of your score. If you can't pay the full balance, make sure you at least pay the minimum each month, but extra is always better.
Okay. No surprise there. What else?
Well, this next one won't improve your score directly, but if you sign up for auto pay with your lenders, it will make sure your payments arrive on time. One more thing you can do to improve your score, Steve, if you're running a balance on a credit card, and let's try to pay that off as quick as you can, but if you are, make sure it's 30% or less of your available balance. That's called your credit utilization rate, and it makes up another 30% of your overall credit score. Now, we mentioned that your credit score is drawn from your credit report. You can also get a free credit report from each of the credit reporting bureaus once a year at annualcreditreport.com. It's a good idea to get those at least once a year. You may want to check for errors that could affect your score. If you find one, file a dispute, which you can do online at that website. Again, annualcreditreport.com.
And there you have it. Great information. Everything you needed to know about your credit score and how to get one for free. Thanks, Rob. This is MoneyWise Live. We'll be right back.
Many people adopt an attitude toward marriage and finances that it'll all work out somehow. But sadly, it often doesn't. Financial woes can devastate a marriage. But there is a better way. God's Way. Money and Marriage God's Way by Howard Dayton will help you discover God's approach to growing your finances, strengthening your relationship with your mate, and cultivating godly joy. Money and Marriage God's Way is available when you click the store button at moneywiselive.org.
Our friends at Sound Mind Investing have been helping Christians reach their financial goals since 1990 with step-by-step guidance for investors just getting started, making choices in a 401k, or getting ready for retirement, all grounded in God's Word. The SMI slogan is Financial Wisdom for Living Well. More information is available online at soundmindinvesting.org. The SMI website also includes articles about common money management and investing topics. soundmindinvesting.org.
Hi, I'm John Erickson Todd, and every day is an Ephesians chapter 6 kind of day. What do I mean? Well, the Holy Spirit tells us in that chapter to put on the full armor of God. Not part of it, not some of it, but all of it. Why? Because as followers of Jesus, the enemy has placed a big target on your back and mine. He hates us. He hates you. So do not be lulled into a spiritual stupor thinking that your enemy is more interested in others. If you name Christ as Lord, the devil has you in his crosshairs. And today, do not let him decimate your faith, wound you with discouragement, cripple you with temptation, or take you out of the battle. In short, put on the full armor and fight by trusting and obeying Jesus. For you, friend, are more than a conqueror, and God is with you. So get a fresh grip on your shield and sword. Winning victories for Christ today is your calling.
If the heavy burden of debt is robbing you of freedom and peace of mind, Christian Credit Counselors can help. We're a nationwide nonprofit credit counseling organization that has helped over 300,000 individuals in the last 27 years get out of credit card debt 80% faster while honoring that debt in full. To learn how Christian Credit Counselors can help you, visit ChristianCreditCounselors.org. That's ChristianCreditCounselors.org. Or call 800-557-1985.
Hey, you can find us and like us, if you wouldn't mind, on Facebook when you go to MoneyWise Media. MoneyWise Media, if you are a Facebook person, you'll find lots of interesting material there. We try to update that on a daily basis. There's also a place to tell us what topics you'd like to hear us discuss on a future broadcast. And if you look really hard, there'll be a picture there of Rob West. You'll recognize him when you see him. All right, let's go to, Chicago, Illinois. Hey, Rick, how can we help you?
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
Long story short, my mother is in retirement, and she is going to be getting married again, and she is going to be living with this new guy, and she has basically offered, she wants to sell her house and use the money to pay off my student loan and my brother's student loan. But my brother and I have thought there might be a better use of her house rather than just sell it. And so what are your thoughts on maybe turning it into a rental, but also using the equity, which is, it's 100% equity. She paid the house off like 15 years ago, and using some of the equity to do other real estate investments also.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell me your mom's situation. I mean, I realize she's getting married, but she's obviously getting married later in life. Will her expenses be covered in the new marriage? Is she still working? Kind of what is a bit of what's going on there?
She's retired, and she was a nurse for, I don't know, a long time. And yeah, her expenses were covered. She gets money from Social Security. The guy that she's marrying, he's got a pretty hefty retirement account. He's talked about, like, they don't have to worry about money, so.
Yeah. All right. And in terms of the investments, I mean, is she making this available to you all, and these will be essentially your investments? You're just leveraging her asset? Or are you wanting to help her maximize this asset, and essentially these are her investments?
The idea would be to, like, I guess maybe even gift us the house. I mean, she's kind of gifting us the house in essence, but we just think, oh, why don't we use it better by using it as a rental? We're in Chicago. We could probably rent this out for probably, it's a 3-bedroom house in the neighborhood that she lives in. We could probably get $2,500, maybe even $3,000 a month on it. And then my brother and I have both flipped houses on the side, and we were thinking of using it to, like, do some more flips with it. And,
Yeah. Okay. Very good. Well, I think the key is that you all have a lot of clarity with regard to what everybody's intentions are. I would even recommend and do it in a way, obviously, that, you know, everybody understands, you know, that we're family and we're trying to honor each other's wishes here, but we want to document everybody's intentions so that there's clear communication and down the road, nobody's asking questions about, well, I thought this was mine and, well, we thought it was ours and that kind of thing. So I think it's important to have clarity around the intentions with regard to the asset, if it's not going to be sold outright and then gifted to you, or if it's not going to be retitled in your name. Now, just take the house, assume it's yours for a moment. The question then is, do we rent it out? Do we rent it out and tap the equity and try to buy more real estate, or do we sell it and just invest the money in something else, perhaps the stock market? And I think, you know, that's where you need to look at you and your brother, if you're going into this together, almost look at it like a business and just say, first of all, what about our personal finances? That's always where we'd start when we look at a business. Are we able to do this? Do we have anything that would prohibit us from doing this? Meaning we don't have the cash reserves. We have too much personal debt that we need to address first, those kinds of things. But assuming those things are in check and you have the experience and the time to put toward managing a piece of real estate that's a rental property, in effect becoming a landlord, then I think the next question is, okay, given that she's going to give you this asset, do we in fact retitle it? And I talked to an attorney about that, a real estate attorney. And then secondly, you know, what do we do in terms of the equity that's there? My preference would be that you take the income and you start socking it away, and we try to do this with cash in terms of buying the next property. Perhaps you take a mortgage on the next property, and then we focus on trying to pay that off and then move right down the line, as opposed to pulling all the equity out and leveraging too heavily this property. And then in the event of a downturn in the real estate market, perhaps a downturn combined with losing a tenant, puts you in a situation where you're over leveraged and now we've got some challenges. So I would really try to go slower than faster, especially as it relates to taking on a bunch of debt. But if this is your mom's wishes and everybody's understanding exactly what the case is, there's no question that it makes sense, if you all have the expertise and the time, to go ahead and rent out this real estate and use it as an income source to either begin becoming debt free if you're not already personally, or socking it away for future purchases down the road.
Rob, what about the student loans? At what point do we attack those?
Yeah, I missed that. So there, who has the student loans?
So I have a student loan and my brother has a student loan. I don't know if you need the totals. I work in nonprofit. There's a law out there or something like that, that if you work in nonprofit for 10 years, they'll forgive your loans after that.
Right.
I'm about
some nonprofits.
5 years into it.
Yeah. Okay. So as long as you've done your homework there and you're on track to for the loan forgiveness, and you're going to make 120 on-time payments over 10 years, then yeah, there is forgiveness there. But I would, before I think about buying another property, I'm taking that income that's being thrown off of this real estate and becoming completely debt-free. And then that gives you even more money to sock into perhaps the next property. So again, I'd go slow. I wouldn't get over-leveraged. I'd focus on shoring up your personal finances first, and then make sure you have clear communication with your mom.
Rick, we wish you and your brother and your mom the very best. We appreciate your call very much. Thanks again. KMBI out to Spokane, Washington. And Gail, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I'm retired, and I do all my own investing. And I was reading about robo-investors or robo-advisors in My Money Market magazine. And other than Sound Mind Investing, I do all my own investing. So what do you know about that?
Well, Gail, robo-advisors, which is also known as online advisors or automated investing, they use computer algorithms and advanced software to build and manage investment portfolios. In this environment where what's called fintech, financial technology, has begun to sweep through financial services, combined with low cost, there's a significant fee compression going on. It's introduced these new robo-advisors to create very well-diversified, very high-quality, very low-cost portfolios for people who want to take typically an indexed approach to investing, using primarily, and in most cases, exchange-traded funds to do their investing. I would put this into the do-it-yourself category, even though there is a robo-advisor back there, in terms of there's some logic and, of course, algorithms, as I mentioned, you know, behind the investment methodology. But I would make sure that it fits into your overall investment strategy, and I wouldn't discount the value of having a professional advisor and planner behind you helping to coordinate all of it, making sure you're properly diversified, you're not taking too much risk, you're taking into account the tax considerations, plus the planning side, just looking at all this through a biblical lens and helping you think about just the other aspects of financial planning. But is there anything wrong with the robo-advisor concept? No. Again, I would put it in the do-it-yourself category, probably not just, you know, for the average person who would benefit, I think, from professional financial advice that's more active. Given that you're already doing it yourself, I think this is probably something to look at, especially as this space continues to mature.
Okay. And speaking of that, I would like to talk to a financial advisor. I really don't want them investing for me, but I see you have about three of them on your website there in Spokane, and I assume they're Christian advisors. So that's where I'd go.
Yeah, it's exactly right. And just to clarify there, we don't employ any financial advisors. Those are just advisors who have earned the Certified Kingdom Advisor designation, which is the designation we trust in this space. You would go to moneywiselive.org, put in your zip code, as it sounds like you already have, and it would give you a list of any advisors in your area that have earned CKA. I would visit with them, interview them, and then make your decision as to who's the right fit. Make sure you understand their experience and how they charge for their fees and those types of things. But at least you'll know it's somebody who shares your values and has been trained to offer biblical counsel.
Yeah. Dale, we're glad that you called today, and we hope that information helps. Thanks so very much. This is MoneyWise Live with Rob West. I'm Steve Moore. Today's program is pre-recorded. If you hear a phone number, our apologies, but please don't call. Nonetheless, we have callers all lined up. Interesting calls, so you'll want to stick around and stay with us. Don't go away.
Many people are experiencing financial challenges, such as credit card debt, downsizing, dead-end jobs, and depleted savings. In fact, more than half of all divorces are the result of financial pressures at home. But there's hope. In Your Money Counts, biblical financial expert Howard Dayton shows that the Bible is a veritable blueprint for managing your finances, and you'll discover the profound impact it has on your relationship with God. Your Money Counts is available when you click the store button at moneywiselive.org.
Buying a home is the largest, most nerve-wracking purchase most of us ever make. It doesn't help that you're entering a maze of unfamiliar words and confusing options that can leave you intimidated, frustrated, and afraid you've been taken advantage of. Navigating the Mortgage Maze by Dale Vermillion helps you clear up the confusion, unrack your nerves, and make the best mortgage decisions possible with confidence. Navigating the Mortgage Maze, available when you click the store button at moneywiselive.org.
Hebrews 4:12 says, "For the word of God is quick and powerful and sharper than any two-edged sword." Here's Beth Moore with a quick word.
It is absolutely crucial. My heart's desire, my jealousy for the body of Christ is to see all of us really walk the thing out in the reality of our own lives and challenges. And a very important part of this walk is beginning to learn how to obey the personal promptings of the Spirit to you. But if we're not taught the how to, we do all this what to talk, but how in the world do we know the practical side of it and how this thing is going to live itself out in our lives. I want us to think about things like, what does it mean for the Spirit to bear witness? What do we do? How do we hear the Spirit of God speak to us in areas that are not black or white? We've been freed from legalism, but what we've been freed to is not without challenge. And I'm asking you, can you discern on a fairly consistent day-in, day-out basis, can I discern promptings of the Holy Spirit in my life, in your life, to lead us and tell us what to do in situations that aren't black and white? Will God really tell us whether or not to take the new position? And the answer to that question is yes.
Beth is dedicated to encourage people to come to know and love Jesus Christ through the study of Scripture. Why wait? Click online today, like a podcast or television teaching or both. Just visit BethMoore.org. That's BethMoore.org. Or download the Living Proof app. Search for Beth Moore in your app store.
Great to have you with us today on our edition of MoneyWise Live with Rob West. We have a number of calls all lined up waiting to speak with Rob, and I think you'll find them interesting. Let's see. We go to Wichita, Kansas, and welcome Pat.
Hi, Pat. Thanks for calling. How can we help you?
Hi. I am 72. I'm on Social Security income. My husband moved to heaven in February. Oh. I am now considering selling my house and using that money to remodel my son's shop. It has a 1,000-square-foot shop behind his house that I can live in. I should have, if I do that, about $500 more each month. I figure maybe I could travel a little, whatever, as well as being close to my preschool grandchildren. Instead of just staying here by myself with no way to pay for any house repairs, but I'm wondering, are there other things that I need to be careful of in considering this?
You know, Pat, first of all, let me just say I'm sorry to hear about your husband's passing. But in general, I like this plan. You know, I think the key is you don't want to make any major life decisions too quickly after you go through something like this. I would say at least 6 months, perhaps even a year. Think about it. Pray about it. Really ask God, you know, what he has for you in this next season. But I love the idea of you reducing your lifestyle, living well within your means, perhaps freeing up some additional margin for you to save, to do additional giving, as you mentioned. Perhaps you might even want to travel a bit. And then in addition to that, being closer to family, because obviously there you can never go wrong with that, being able to invest in your grandchildren, being near your son. That sounds like a wonderful idea. As long as you've lived in your home the last two out of the last 5 years, you would have up to $250,000 in gain that would be excluded from any capital gains tax. If you had anything beyond that, then that would be likely a long-term capital gain. Beyond that, I think this sounds like a great plan for you moving forward. Was there anything in particular, though, you were struggling with?
Well, I guess one of the things that bothered me a little bit is my husband, at the end of his surgery and complications, went on Medicaid. And then I found out that after he passed, they put a lien on my house, not for very much, but that thought occurred to me, what if I end up somehow in that situation? Can they disturb my son's property?
Well, this would be in his name, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so you would just be taking the proceeds from your home and improving it, right?
Right.
Okay. No, as if it's not your property, they wouldn't be able to place a lien on it. I mean, they could look at other opportunities if you owed them money to perhaps go after that, but not on the home itself. I'm not an attorney. You'd, of course, want to get legal counsel. But, in this situation, that was your home or your home with your husband. And so given that there was a balance owed, then they placed the lien on your property. That would not be the case in the home that you improve and live in if it's owned by your son and not you. So I think at the end of the day, as long as you take the time you need and really pray and think through this, I like the idea of you reducing lifestyle, being closer to family. It makes a lot of sense to me.
Mm, and we wish you the best, Pat. Thank you very much for calling in today. Let's quickly go to Moscow Mills, Missouri, and help Beverly with some student loans.
Hi, Beverly. How can we help?
I owe $50,000 in student loans, and I was wondering, was loan forgiveness the best way to go with it?
Yeah, in terms of loan forgiveness, what are you thinking for? Have you researched a loan forgiveness program that works for you in terms of where you're working, perhaps a public service job or for a nonprofit or something else?
I don't know. I know that they want $200 for 6 months, then $40 after that a month.
Okay,
I'm not really able to do that. I make $2,400 a month, and if I'm lucky, out of a month, yeah, I might get paid three times instead of two.
Okay. Well, are these federal loans that you're talking about, Beverly?
It's student loans.
Yeah. So there would be a federal loan that you got from the federal government, either as a part of a financial aid package another type of federal loan, or it could be a private loan that you went out and got privately from a bank or another lending institution. You believe it's a federal loan?
Yeah, from the school.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So what you want to do is call the loan servicer and just find out the options that are available. One of the benefits of a federal loan is that there are income-based repayment plans, a number of them that would allow you to pay based on the income that's available. And so while you're focusing on getting income up, reducing debt, living well within your means, you would be able to take advantage of some of these income-based plans and hopefully fit that budget in there. When you have a little bit more margin down the road, I'd really encourage you to stay laser-focused on paying it off as quick as you can.
Beverly, thank you very much for calling in today. You're listening to MoneyWise Live with Rob West. MoneyWise Live, all about God's wisdom for your finances. If we can help you, well, on another day, call 1-800-525-7000, because today we're not really in the studio. We're pre-recorded. Nonetheless, some great wisdom and calls coming your way.
Investing is more than just returns. It's an expression of who you are and what you value. Does the way you invest your money reflect your identity as a Christian? At Eventide, we design investments for performance and a better world, so you can invest with the confidence to reach your financial goals while remaining true to your Christian values and commitments. We call this investing that makes the world rejoice. More is available at investeventide.com. That's investeventide.com.
Thank you from the bottom of my heart. I couldn't have had the procedure I needed without CHM's help sharing the bills. That letter from a member displays Christian Healthcare Ministry's purpose to glorify God and serve His people. CHM is the original non-insurance voluntary health cost-sharing ministry, enabling its members to share the cost of each other's medical bills. Call 800-791-6225 or visit chministries.org.
The Moody Radio Verse of the Week is found in 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 13 and 15. Therefore, preparing your minds for action and being sober-minded, set your hope fully on the grace that will be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. But as He who called you is holy, you also be holy in all your conduct. That's 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 13 and 15, the Moody Radio Verse of the Week.
Long for something good, true, and secure. There's a hunger for a hope that goes beyond politics and entertainment and reaches deep into our souls. That hunger can only be satisfied by Jesus. For more than 90 years, Moody Radio has faithfully delivered that message of hope to millions so they can take the next step in their walk with Christ.
Call 1-800-DL-MOODY or visit moodyradio.org.
God cares a great deal more about our money than most of us imagine. In fact, Jesus says more about our use of money and possessions than about anything else, including both heaven and hell. In Managing God's Money, author Randy Alcorn breaks it all down in a simple, easy-to-follow format that makes it the perfect reference tool if you're interested in gaining a solid biblical understanding of money, possessions, and eternity. Managing God's Money is available when you click the store button at moneywiselive.org.
With SRN News, I'm John Scott. The unemployment numbers are in, but not as bad as some predicted. The coronavirus crisis has sent the U.S. unemployment rate to 14.7%, 20.5 million jobs vanishing in April. An aide to Vice President Mike Pence has the coronavirus, marking the second person in the White House complex known to test positive this week. White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany is confirming the latest positive testing, insisting the White House continues to operate safely. Earlier today, President Trump and the First Lady participated in a wreath laying at the World War II Memorial on the National Mall in Washington on this, the 75th anniversary of VE Day. Wall Street brushing off a record-breaking job report loss and pushed higher today. The Dow picked up 455 points. The Nasdaq was ahead 141. This is SRN News.
This is MoneyWise Live. Your host is Rob West. I'm Steve Moore. Hey, if you hear a phone number mentioned today, please ignore that phone number. Today's broadcast is a reprise edition of the program, but I think the upcoming information will help you and bless you and make you a wise steward of what God's given you. And this is a MoneyWise email question that came in from Robert. Dear Rob, I received an inheritance large enough to pay off my mortgage. That's my only debt. The money is in mutual funds. Is it better to pay it all off at one shot or with one shot, or should I break it up over a few years?
Yeah. Robert, I would really pray and think through this. If you have a financial professional, I would get some counsel on this as well. I love the idea of you being debt-free, and I certainly would like, if at all possible, for you to enter retirement debt-free. I also think if you have the ability to pay off debt and be free from your mortgage, you should consider it, and that should be near the top of the list. I think the only thing to factor in would be, number one, the investments you have. Number two, looking at what liquidity you have. And so I wouldn't want you to take, for instance, if this was your only asset that was able to be liquidated by selling these investments because you don't have a lot of other liquid savings, I wouldn't want you to lose out on that liquidity by putting it all in your mortgage, even though I love that you would be moving toward being debt-free. And so I would just want to understand a little bit more about your situation. Now, if you decide this makes sense in light of your overall financial picture, you've got enough emergency savings, you're on track with retirement, this is quote-unquote extra money, and you want the peace of mind or you have the conviction of being debt-free, you want to pay it off, I'd say just do it all at once. But I would just understand the implications and want somebody to give a once over to your financial situation to make sure this is the right time, or whether you should be doing it a little bit at a time and just trying to accelerate the payoff and not giving up all of this liquidity that you have.
And that's great advice. If you have a question that's just a couple of lines and you'd like to send it by email rather than calling it in, the address is questions@moneywise.org, questions@moneywise.org. Fort Lauderdale, Christy, thanks for holding. What's on your mind?
Hi, thank you so much for your time. I have two questions. The
sure.
First one is that my husband retired already, and but he continued working. We like to know if we'll be able to put more money to the 401k or put in someplace else that money for the retirement.
Yes, that's a great question, Christy. Currently, as far as I understand it, 401k provisions do not allow you to contribute new money once you're no longer actively working for the company sponsoring the plan. But that's not a problem because you can roll it out once you separate from the company. You'd contact the plan administrator and you would open an IRA, an individual retirement account, and then you just roll the 401k over to the IRA with a new custodian, a new institution. And if you don't already have a financial advisor, you could contact a certified Kingdom advisor in your area by going to moneywiselive.org and just click a find a CKA, and I'd interview at least three. If you're going to do this yourself and you decide not to use a financial professional, I'd probably look at Vanguard or Charles Schwab. It would be two great options for you. And once you roll it out to the IRA, as long as you or your husband have earned income, you can contribute to that IRA continually, even in retirement, up to the earned income you have or the maximum for the year, which for you all over age 55 would be $7,000 for 2019. And then at some point, when you reach 70 and a half, you're going to have to take what's called a required minimum distribution, which is a certain amount you'll have to take out each year, and the IRS gives you that table. But bottom line is, once you're retired, separated from the company, you're probably not going to be able to contribute to the 401k, but you can roll it out to an IRA. And if this is his or your together life savings that you've put into this 401k, I'd certainly get some counsel on where to put that money and then how it should be invested. And that's really where an investment advisor can come in.
And Christy, what was your second question?
If he continue working in the same place, he'd be able to put more money.
Yes, if he has not separated from the company, he should be able to continue to contribute to the 401k. Now, if for some reason he went to an independent contractor status where he was a full-time employee and now he's just providing services as an independent contractor and no longer employed, that could be problematic. But if he's still employed by them and meets the requirements, full-time employee, then he, yeah, certainly would be able to contribute to the 401k.
Christy, does that do it?
Yes, thank you so much. Yes, and the other question was, I have a credit card that I already pay off, but I'm not want to use any more that credit card. Should I close it?
You know, it's something to consider, Christy. Do you have other cards that you use? Is this like an extra one that's just kind of sitting around dormant?
Yes, it's, I have another one because I did those transfers, you know, for one account to another one.
Okay, sure. So. And do you have any balances that you carry on any of the cards?
I have only one, yeah.
Okay. And how much do you owe on that one?
$14,000.
Okay. All right. So a couple of thoughts there. Number one, I like the idea of you simplifying your situation, and that would include closing the account. The only thing you have to understand is that when you close an account, it's going to take that credit availability off the table, which means the overall credit that's available to you is going to decline, which means that the amount you owe, that $14,000, is now a higher percentage of the overall credit. And if that runs up beyond 30%, it's called credit utilization, that's going to pull your score down. So I think the key for you right now, more than anything, is to focus on how can you pay that debt off by not continuing to play the balance transfer game, develop a spending plan. If you need help with that, our MoneyWise coaches can help at moneywiselive.org. But let's really go after that credit card debt, try to pay it off. And if you need some help from ChristianCreditCounselors.org, they can help you pay it off 80% faster. But I would probably not close that account right yet until you get that debt paid down.
Christy, thank you. Chicago, Illinois. Hello, Rachel. Do you have a question?
I do. Thank you so much. So my husband and I were purchasing a home next month, and I'm liquidating a portion of an investment portfolio that I had inherited from my grandmother. And my question is, I had lost my job a year ago, so we wound up using a majority of the savings that we had as our emergency fund. Should I liquidate the rest of that investment portfolio and put that into a savings emergency fund, or should I leave it in the investment portfolio and then just try to save liquid savings in a savings account separately?
Yeah, a couple of thoughts, Rachel. So when you inherited these investments, you obviously got the stepped up basis at that point. And is it currently invested the same way, or is somebody managing this money? Give me a sense of what's happening with that investment portfolio.
Sure, sure. So it's a Schwab portfolio. I had met with a Schwab advisor at one point, and it's in a medium aggressive mode. But I haven't really done much with it. I've kind of just let it sit there. It's a pretty diverse portfolio. So I haven't really done much with it. I've let it just continue to accrue dividends. And I ultimately plan to use it for a down payment on a home. So I'm not very active with it. I just don't know what I should really do with it.
Yeah. Okay, a couple of thoughts. One is, if you have some margin in your financial life, meaning you're not spending everything that's coming in, I'd just start saving now. You can always liquidate that portfolio later if you need to. Second thing is, I'd leave the portfolio there, but I would get some professional advice on that. And if you need an investment advisor, just go to moneywiselive.org.
Thanks, Rob, and we'll be back in a moment.
Money and life run on the same track, but unfortunately, sometimes it seems like your money is heading in a different direction from your goals. In Never Enough, Three Keys to Financial Contentment, author Ron Blue helps you to break down all your financial options to a basic four, and then shows you how to keep it all chugging along in the right direction on the same track. Never Enough, Three Keys to Financial Contentment. Available when you click the store button at moneywiselive.org.
Many people adopt an attitude toward marriage and finances that it'll all work out somehow, but sadly, it often doesn't. Financial woes can devastate a marriage, but there is a better way. God's Way. Money and Marriage God's Way by Howard Dayton will help you discover God's approach to growing your finances, strengthening your relationship with your mate, and cultivating godly joy. Money and Marriage God's Way is available when you click the store button at moneywiselive.org.
Hi, Rob West here. Stories can be a powerful way to motivate people. If you've been helped by listening to MoneyWise Live, sharing your story will encourage others to follow God's financial principles and help free them to serve the Lord more fully. I want to ask you to consider leaving a testimony after the program by calling 800-525-7000. That's 800-525-7000. Thanks, and God bless you.
Kids need boundaries. No matter how hard they try to tell you they don't need rules, it isn't true. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. A lack of limits has a tendency to produce a child that's selfish, demanding, and aggressively controlling. Here's an analogy. A glass of milk is a good thing, but take away the limits of the glass, and all you get is spilled milk. And that good stuff is wasted. Take a look at the limits around your teen. Are they sturdy? Are they fair? If the rules are too confining, your teen will push right through them. If they're too weak, you're training your child to be selfish and demanding. Is there any spilled milk around your home? It's time to pour a fresh glass.
When all else fails, moms and dads turn to Mark Gregston for help. Equip yourself with the wisdom you need to succeed at ParentingTodaysTeens.org.
Hey, a real pleasure to have you with us today. This is MoneyWise Live. I'm Steve Moore, that other guy over there, the guy with the answers. He's Rob West, and we're happy to have you with us on the program today. However, we are pre-recorded. We won't be taking your calls, but we've lined up some calls in advance that I think you'll find interesting, helpful, and very, very practical. At least we've tried to make them that way. So let's continue on with Aurora, Illinois, and Susan. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I do have a rather difficult situation. I'm married to a very wonderful Christian man. And when I was a single parent, every penny I made, I tithe because I firmly believe in it. However, my husband, he does not see it. He does not understand. He doesn't see how the 10% can really be fruitful. And the last 2 years, we've had to raise our 11-year-old granddaughter with no assistance. And so he's even more terrified because every penny, we barely make it month to month. And so he doesn't even, he says, well, if we tithe, we'd be homeless. Mm-hmm. So I don't even know how to advise him, how to help him see that you just have to trust. But
yes.
Yeah. I mean, I understand his dilemma. I feel for him, but I don't know what to do.
Yeah. Well, I certainly understand. It's a tough situation that you're in. I think, first of all, Susan, God desires oneness in the marriage relationship. That's his design for marriage, and that's really the most important thing. He gives us each roles. He gives the husband a role. He gives the wife a role, and each is to, each is really spelled out in God's word as to how we're to approach that. And when it comes to finances, I think that's true as well, that we should seek to be unified. Does that mean we're always going to agree on everything? No, but it does mean that we should purpose ourselves and position ourselves for God's best in that way. And so remember, God doesn't need your money. What he wants is your heart. And what I would do is begin by asking your husband if he'd be willing for the two of you to really, first of all, begin to learn God's way of managing money together. God has a lot to say on this topic. It's clearly on his heart. 2,350 verses, half the parables, 15% of everything Jesus said. And I believe the reason for that is because it's the chief competitor to lordship for most people. We can dethrone God from his rightful place and put money in that place very, very quickly, especially in our culture. And giving, in my experience, is the one thing that will break the grip of money over our lives. We should give out of obedience. We should give as an act of worship. We should give generously. And we're afforded the benefit of joining God in his work when we do that. And I think clearly we should be supporting the local church. I like to use the principle of the tithe as the starting point and then give sacrificially beyond that. And when you experience the joy of giving and you're participating with God in that activity, I find that it's contagious. And because you experience that, you start to reorder your finances over time when you experience the blessing that comes, maybe not financially, it might be. When you experience that blessing, you begin to do what you can to do even more because you see how God is using that in a variety of ways. And so what I would do is start by seeing if he'd be willing to explore the scriptures as it relates to money, not as a way for you to trick him into anything, but just because you want to know the heart of God as it relates to everything you're managing. And I'm going to send you a copy of Howard Dayton's book, Money and Marriage, God's Way. And if you all could work through that a chapter at a time, I would just be prayerful that God would touch his heart and yours at the same time as you explore the scriptures as it relates to money. And then I'd like for you all to set some goals as a part of that. Really thinking about what God has for you and where you all are headed with your finances, with the money you're managing together, including your giving, your savings goals, all the things you want to do. And then lastly, see if he wouldn't be agreeable to you giving a smaller amount, maybe not 10%, but some smaller amount that you could begin giving faithfully. And see if he would agree to say, after 6 months, let's look back and let's see what God has done over this period of time in our finances. And then we'll take it another 6 months. And perhaps at that point, he'll say, you know what? I'd like to do even more. Who knows? Let's see what God does and make this an adventure with God that will hopefully, Lord willing, draw the two of you closer together to one another and ultimately to him in the process. Does that make sense?
That does make sense because I sit there in church feeling so guilty every time they come by and pass the plate. And again, I can't put anything in it. And I'm just sitting there with my head hanging low and I'm angry at him. And I mean, we've even done the Dave Ramsey poll program. And still, it doesn't seem like it's sunk into him.
Well, here's what I would say about that. Number one, the Lord doesn't want you to feel guilty. And number two, don't let Satan get a foothold there to convince you that you're less than. The Lord knows your heart, and I think ultimately what he wants is the two of you to be unified and have a more intimate walk with him. So let's do this. Stay on the line. We're going to get your information. We're going to send you a copy of this book. Let's see if he wouldn't be willing to go on this journey with you and begin exploring God's heart as it relates to your money. And let's just pray that the Lord would really do a work in both of your lives through this process. And then give us a call back, Susan. Let us know how it goes.
And Susan, so many times over the decades that we've been doing this, we've seen husbands and wives disagree on this. But when the wife listens to her husband, doesn't agree, but acquiesces and tries to have a good spirit about it, often the husband will come around. He knows how you feel when he sees that you approach this in a way that humbles yourself and yet honors him. He may just change his approach and his mind on this, not to mention the Holy Spirit and God's Word working in his heart. We wish you the best. Thank you very much. Time for another one, I think. Fort Lauderdale. Leonard, what's your question today for Rob West?
Hi, how you guys doing?
Great, thanks.
I have a question. I have a financial advisor that I got after completing Dave Ramsey, and he recommended that I save up for a home, but I've always thought that you should also be investing at the same time, like in a Roth IRA. And currently, I've only been saving for home while I'm working my way through school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you're wondering whether you should prioritize saving for the home or investing?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, Leonard, you can see a visual representation of our preferred approach. It's just a guideline. Doesn't mean this is the biblical way. Doesn't mean this is the way you have to do it. It's just the way we organize our priorities here at MoneyWise Live. And if you go to moneywiselive.org and scroll down about three quarters of the way, you'll see something that says practicing financial freedom. And you'll see a kind of a pie-shaped diagram where we say, you know, there's only four things you can do with money. There's the money you live on, there's the money you give, there's the money you owe, and then there's the money you grow, which is your savings. And in each of those areas, live, give, owe, and grow, there's three levels, starting at level one, moving to level three, and pursuing financial freedom, recognizing God owns it all. And what you'll find there is that we say, after you have your emergency fund, your 3 to 6 months expenses, once your credit cards are paid off, that really the next savings goal beyond your emergency fund is to get to 10 to 15% of your paycheck going into a retirement account. That's the next goal. And once you're doing that on a systematic basis, then you save for goals and other investments. And I would put a home as one of those goals. So that would just be my preference, that you get to that 15% and then you start saving for the house. If you want to flip it, that's fine. But just understand that the power of compounding works most effectively over a long period of time. So check that out. I think that chart may be a real help to you there at moneywiselive.org.
Thank you, Leonard. We appreciate your phone call today. I'll tell you what, I'm not sure if we have time for Lucian or not. So I'll speak to our engineers. If you'll hold Lucian, we will try to get him at another time when we can answer his question more specifically. But Rob, we've gotten several calls today from people who wanted to talk about giving and generosity. And that's important to us as well, right?
Oh, it's really important, Steve. I think it really is the starting place. You know, if you're not giving, I would simply say you're not experiencing God's best as it relates to your money. Remember, he's the ultimate giver. He gave us his son who paid the penalty for our sin when he died and his shed blood on the cross. So when we're giving, our hearts are calibrated to his. Remember, we're created in his image, so we're most like him when we're giving. But it does all kinds of things in our hearts as it aligns our hearts with what God is doing. Remember, Jesus said, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. So if you're not giving today, think about perhaps what's getting in the way of that. Is it lifestyle? Maybe I need to cut back some spending. Is it vision? Do I need to have a vision for where I'm giving and what God can do through that? Is it the people I'm spending time with? Do I need to surround myself with people that are generous? Whatever it is, I would say find a way to start giving systematically and proportionately to your income, not out of legalism, but out of a generous heart with a cheerful heart that's grateful for what God has given us. And I submit that over time, not only will the grip of money be loosened over your life, you'll experience the joy that comes from giving. And I'm really excited about that for each of you.
Yeah, and Rob, if it wasn't for the great generosity and giving that people have done as far as this radio program is concerned, I dare say I'm not sure if we'd be here, because obviously there are expenses involved in producing a national radio program.
Yeah.
We do things behind the scenes that people don't know about that allows us to minister to people who don't have enough to purchase resources and materials, and it's the giving and generosity of our listeners that allows all of that to happen.
Well, I would say emphatically, we would not be here. We're only here out of your generous support. And so whatever you can do, whether it's $100 or $1,000 or $10,000, just know we'd be good stewards of that, and you'll keep this program on the air. Just go to MoneyWiseLive.org.
Click the donate button at the top of the page, MoneyWiseLive.org. Thanks for listening. MoneyWise Live is a partnership between Moody Radio and MoneyWise Media. Have a great remainder of your day. Join us again next time.